Hello everyone and welcome to this week's Big Boat interview. My name is Sophia Wilson, Acting Deputy Editor at Boat International, and this week I caught up with Captain Malcolm Jacquetin. With more than 30 years experience as a yacht captain, he's taken the helm of an impressive array of vessels, ranging from a Swan 57 to 164 metre Eclipse. He's now predominantly based on land, where he's the founder of consultancy 360 Marine, and he's also created Superyacht 2030. He's passionate about the superyacht industry finding a way to become more sustainable, and we talk through the various challenges that the industry faces, as well as why he believes there needs to be a collective effort for meaningful change to occur. Captain Malcolm doesn't hold back on his opinions, and it's certainly a thought-provoking conversation, so I hope you enjoy the interview. Morning, Malcolm. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. Where are you joining us from?
Good morning, Sophia. I'm joining you from sunny Monaco, and a big thank you to you for inviting me on this podcast and to discuss a very important topic for the industry.
Yeah, and obviously kind of diving straight into it, your Superyacht 2030 website says at the top of it, there is no such thing as a sustainable superyacht. Why do you think it's so important that the industry acknowledges that?
Well, I think for many reasons. I mean, in terms of sustainability, what we're talking about is what we do now and the impact on the future generations. And in terms of the industry acknowledging its place in that ecosystem, if you like, and unless we recognise the environmental impacts of yachting, in particular CO2 emissions, and start to measure them, then unless you measure them and acknowledge them, then it's very difficult to demonstrate and to make change. So therefore, it's crucial that the industry as a whole does look at this in a much more holistic fashion and starts to take their responsibility more seriously to get on board with the decarbonisation of industry and, in our case, the superyacht industry.
And we've kind of gone straight onto the carbon topic here. You obviously very kindly joined us at the Explorer Yacht Summit back in November, and there was an owner there who kind of asked specifically, how can you calculate how much CO2 his yacht's using? How important is it as an industry that we start to be able to understand that calculation? I understand from your perspective, it's actually quite straightforward to make.
I think it's fundamental, and this is where I would call the industry to gather together on this, because, you know, we need to have the data. The industry needs to have the data about its own emissions that are generated from accurate sources. And unfortunately, we hold ourselves to hostage somewhat by other governmental and perhaps media-related people making up their own figures with respect to superyachts' CO2 emissions. I mean, the IMO have done a job on this in their various greenhouse gas studies that they've done, but I think it's not completely an accurate picture that they provide, because of how they assemble the data, and it also doesn't take into account, for example, the shore power, which has upstream emissions, and also fuel like automotive gas oil, which superyachts also use. So even the figure that they place on the superyacht emissions, which in 2018 was 4.9 million tons of CO2, is, I believe, an underestimation of the total amount. And if you then plot the previous reports of yacht emissions from the previous IMO reports, you'll see that it's actually a continuing growth. There is no tailing off. There is no reduction that can be seen from the evidence that the IMO have in place. So I think it's fundamentally important that the industry acts collaboratively and collectively to gather this data so that we can start understanding the size of the challenge that we have ahead. But not only that data becomes the proof of how the industry is improving over time. And if we don't have those two metrics, then it's impossible to demonstrate to regulators, to society, for example, that the industry is taking this challenge seriously.
And starting from where we are now, how bad is it as a whole, as an industry? How does it compare to, say, the automotive industry or private aviation industry? Where is it sitting at the moment, do you think?
Well, I mean, I haven't done the statistics of that. I'm being very much focused on the superyacht industry. But in terms of where the superyacht industry sits within the shipping industry, which accounts for about 3% of the global CO2 emissions, we're about 0.3% of shipping's overall emissions. Now, you know, when you think a bit about it like that, it doesn't sound a lot. But individually, it's huge, and collectively, it's as much as some small countries with populations of millions of people. So it's not insignificant, and as the IPCC say, every ton of carbon has an impact on the environment, and those impacts, you know, climate change isn't something for the future; it's already something that's being felt now.
And as an industry, what are some of the things that you think should be happening now? And how much kind of hope is there? You know, you mentioned we're only 0.3 and it's only not a handful, there's obviously thousands of vessels, but a small number of vessels. In a way, does that make that easier? Because you can make a bigger impact quite quickly, do you think?
I think I've become more optimistic. Perhaps a couple of years ago, I wasn't so optimistic, but I follow very much what's happening in the shipping industry. And there's some incredible advances that are being made there with technology, with fuels and so forth. And some of those are starting to filter through into the yachting industry. But I guess my biggest concern was with the legacy vessels. What solutions were there going to be for, you know, and it's difficult to say exactly how many yachts there are, but you see anything from 7,000 to 10,000 yachts, depending on how you define the size of a super yacht. But nevertheless, there was an issue with them in terms of how are they going to decarbonize in the future. And what we can see now is that there are solutions for even for the legacy vessels. You know, there are efficiency gains that they can be made through their own energy efficiency optimization on board, reducing speed, turning off unused equipment, you know, being more considerate with the air conditioning, turning off stabilizers when they're not absolutely required, which are many of the things that yachts already do, but perhaps they need to put even more effort into doing that. But the biggest benefits will come, I think, in the future, where there will be energy efficiency refits that can be implemented in the legacy vessels. So adding battery banks to improve the energy efficiency or the efficiency of generators, and then moving to the next generation of biofuels, which, depending on the feedstock and the production process, can reduce the well-to-wake greenhouse gas emissions by up to 90%, which is a huge, huge impact.
And something else that often, you know, comes up in these conversations is carbon offsetting. Does that work, or is that just a kind of way of making things potentially seem better than they are?
I think one has to be a little bit pragmatic with the solutions, and one could say that offsetting is better than nothing. But I think what it does, it prevents the necessary change that we require, because if you look at the price of offsets, for example, I mean, you can buy a gold standard offset for less than $7 now. is that really going to make a big difference to people? Is that really going to make them say, well, yes, we really need to change to low carbon fuels or to alternative technologies? I don't think so. And you also have to question the permanence of some of these projects. You know, I mean, planting trees is great, but you know, you need a significant amount of trees to offset your CO2. And of course, there's always the danger those trees may be burnt down or in future years be harvested. I mean, the offsetting schemes have inherent issues that mean that they're not the long-term solution. They are part of the solution now, but people should be looking to removing carbon wherever possible, and for the balance that's left over, then yes, then use those offsetting schemes for that.
And looking kind of forward to the future, in terms of future fuels or cell technology, how viable are some of those solutions, and which in your kind of mind from what you've seen do you think are the most viable moving forwards?
Well, I think there's a number. I think we, as I say, we have the second generation biofuels, the hydro-treated vegetable oils that are produced from waste fats and oils, and using renewable energy to create that fuel. So that's one. So that's fantastic. As I say, that's a solution that's available now for yachts. These fuels are what they call drop-in fuels. So they're direct replacement for fossil fuels.
And as an owner or a captain, if this fuel exists now, what would potentially put you off using it? Because it seems like a no-brainer that you'd use it, right?
Well, unfortunately, it's cost. The thing that one has to bear in mind that, and I think Bill Gates described it very well in his book, that all of these solutions require a green premium. There is no solution that will not be more expensive than yachting is today. So all alternative fuels are going to be more expensive. The technical solutions are going to be more expensive. You know, a hybrid yacht is clearly more expensive than a conventional yacht. A fuel cell yacht is going to be many times more expensive. So that's, I think, something that the industry is going to have to adapt to, is that going forward, yachting is going to become more and more expensive. Not just because of the alternative solutions and the green premium, but also because I think that much like shipping, we will eventually have a carbon tax placed on the fuel that super yachts use. And so, for example, the EU emissions trading scheme, that carbon tax is currently at $100 per ton. Now, there's approximately four times. So for one ton, you emit almost four times the amount of carbon. So that adds $400 or 400 euros in this case to the cost of your ton of fuel. And one could say that actually, you know, by introducing a carbon tax will act as a catalyst to change as well, because then the differential between some of these technologies and fuels becomes so reduced that it then becomes a no-brainer to move on to the alternative fuels and technologies.
So would you support something like that coming in to try and act as that catalyst?
I think yes. I think unfortunately, there are no regulations at the moment that require any particular energy efficiency for yachts. I mean, they're outside of most of the definitions of ships that have to comply with the EXI and the EEDI and the carbon intensity from the IMO. So without regulation, then you're left to human behavior. And sometimes, unfortunately, you need to have a little bit of carrot and stick. And in this case, I think we need a bit more stick to drive that change. Because I suppose this speaks to the reason why I put 2030 down as the target date, is that, you know, with all of these things with sustainability, there's also the question of a just transition, you know, that you can't stop industries now because it impacts on society, on people's businesses, their way of life, their ability to support their families. But nevertheless, that doesn't mean to say that you have to stand still. You have to make that transition, and you have to be showing that you are changing an industry that's been reliant on fossil fuels for all of its life into a new into a new way of yachting. And you can see so many targets now coming out from governments and industries that, you know, a 50% of reduction of CO2 emissions by 2030. Then you can see the challenge that the industry has. And, you know, we're somewhat behind the curve in my view, and we are again hostage to outside influences such as regulations that may be impacted on us, such as this carbon tax, but more so I think is a societal pressure which will only grow. And I think COVID has kind of put that to the background recently, but the gathering societal pressures will only grow as this decade, as we move through this decade. And we're already starting to see the negative exposure of yachts in the press, which will only continue unless we can show that we are a responsible industry. We don't want to make yachting an industry that becomes unacceptable on any level. And that's the danger that we are exposed to unless we take this more seriously. We are acting proactively, and we act much quicker. And that requires a complete collective collaboration throughout the whole industry. You know, this is in everybody's interest, from the builders all the way down to the crew, the suppliers, to work on this. And so far, I haven't seen that collective appetite or engagement, and I think that is almost fundamental to our future.
Do you think that some of that comes down to ultimately the end client, the owners, the charterers, that, you know, in a way they do correctly have the most impact on the industry? Do you think it's that change needs to come from them, or do you think the industry is going to have to lead it first?
I think it's a bit of both. I mean, clearly that there is a new generation, and perhaps some of the older generation of yacht owners who are becoming more concerned about this. And you know, we do have a number of interesting projects that are using alternative technologies now. But in the main, the yachting industry is still business as usual. So I can understand, you know, from the shipyard's point of view, there's a high degree of risk involved in any new technology, and it is a financial burden to start developing new platforms which they can't be 100% confident that they are going to be the solutions of the future. So in those cases, they need a combination of the shipyard, who has the appetite to invest their time in it, but also an owner who's willing to shoulder some of that burden of risk, and that's what we can see with one or two projects, and the more that we learn about those projects, and the more that we can educate the industry and the owners to the alternatives, is another way of how I see the industry changing. Because I think there's a lot of poor information in the industry about the challenges and the solutions. And it's clear that technology is not the barrier anymore. You know, a few years ago, you might have said that, you know, we can't do this, or we can't do that, or that's not viable. But I think that shipping is actually showing that that the technology is no longer the impediment to moving forward.
And San Lorenzo obviously announced a few weeks ago that they're hoping to have their first fuel-powered superyacht on the water by 2024. Do you see that as one of the projects that's kind of going to be a big milestone for the industry?
I mean, I applaud many of these initiatives and concepts, but the details on it are very sketchy. If it does what it says, then of course that will be a huge step forward for the industry. And in fact, the way that I also look at it is that, you know, the next build cycles are, you know, when you look at the available slots for shipyards, 2025, and those boats that start that cycle or that build in 2025 are going to be launched towards the end of the decade. Well, you know, if owners and shipyards are not looking at alternative fuel and technologies now, by the time they're launched at the end of the decade, how much will they be impacted by the changes that are going to happen between now and then? It's the risk is huge. And the interesting thing is that maybe is not being recognized is that, back to the aspect of cost, all of these things will have a cost impact on super yachts in the future, not just because of the higher running costs, but also in terms of resale value. So and finance. And already in a recent conference, Credit Suisse were talking about the risk profile of industries, and in particular yachts, and how they will manage their loan books in the future. So, for example, will more energy efficient yachts have more favorable loan terms than higher polluting yachts? How will that impact the brokerage market and the secondhand value in the future? You know, these are some of the questions that I don't think the industry and many owners and their advisors are looking at, but they will have significant impact in the future, in my opinion.
And is there a risk the other way, that you commit to one of these new technologies, say the yacht takes 3-4 years to build, and actually by the time that yacht's on the water, technology's moved on again, and actually you would be better with another solution? Because there is always that kind of lag between committing to the build and the build being on the water.
Yes, and that is clearly a risk. You know, because there is no clear solution. And I think that, again, the industry has to accept that there won't be a one-size-fits-all solution. You know, there will be many different solutions depending on the operational profile and the plans of an owner. So, for example, there might be battery-powered yachts that are just going to be used in coastal waters, or even hydrogen-powered yachts. But those yachts that need to have autonomy to cross oceans, they're going to have to find different energy carriers, whether that's, you know, synthetic diesel or alternative fuels like methanol. They will have to make a decision on that. But the thing is, with both the alternative diesel fuels and with the likes of methanol, they are already being adopted by other industries. You know, we have sustainable aviation fuel. Shipping is also using some of this synthetic diesel. There are synthetic diesel brokers like Good Fuels, for example, who are planning to set up Caribbean and Mediterranean distribution. Methanol, for example, as another example, is a fuel that's mainly produced by fossil fuels at the moment, but they're also developing low carbon production methods of that. So, and methanol is one of the fuels that, if you like, is a pathway. So you have grey methanol now, which, depending on the production process, could reduce CO2 by 20%. Then you go to blue methanol, which uses carbon capture, that reduces it even further. until you eventually end up at green methanol, where you have 90 to 100% reduction in CO2 emissions. So there are solutions, and they're not such a gamble because they're already being implemented in the shipping industry.
And where does sailing yachts fit into the puzzle? Because in a way that seems like a very obvious solution, wind power. How does that fit, and how does that work when it comes to, you know, super yacht size?
I mean, I would love to see more sailing yachts. I mean, I came into the industry running a beautiful Swan 65, but when you look at the, if you like, the sizable super yacht sized sailing yachts, and you look at the operational profile, which applies to all super yachts, is that they spend such a limited time actually underway that, yes, you know, whilst you're using those sails, you can make you can reduce your energy consumption, but because you have such high hotel loads, it's not the complete answer. You know, it's an incremental change, an incremental reduction in energy consumption, therefore CO2 emissions, but it's not the holy grail. The only holy grail is once we can do away with fossil fuels altogether.
And we touched on it earlier, but how important a part do you think retrofit is going to have to play as well? Because it's all very well building new yachts that have this technology, but as we've mentioned, there's this huge fleet of super yachts out there already. And should we be looking more at what we can be doing in the refit process?
Yeah, I mean, that speaks to, you know, the idea of the circular economy. You know, don't dispose of things, you know, recycle, reuse. And that's entirely applicable to super yachts, but the big problem is that if you look at it in terms of the embedded emissions in a super yacht, you know, so say for example a 60 meter yacht, its production embedded emissions are say 2,000 tons of CO2 as a conservative estimate, but when you do a refit, you don't change out the engines in any significant fashion. You don't add any energy efficiency systems to that. That saving that you make by reusing that vessel are quickly cancelled by the ongoing emissions of using old technology. So, in fact, I did a calculation that those 2,000 tons of embedded emissions would be used up within about 2 years.
Wow. Okay.
So yes, refit and rebuild. So refit is less of an intervention where you might make changes to the energy management systems. You might bring in intelligent automation to turn on and off systems, to balance the power, but rebuild might be actually changing the complete propulsion and power generation system for state of the art. But in doing that, the biggest problem with the rebuild is not necessarily the technology, the, you know, moving to, for example, to methanol internal combustion engines, or perhaps using fuel cells. That's not the problem. The problem is going to be the fuel, because compared to diesel fuel, all the alternative fuels require more space. They require more space. They have more safety considerations to be taken into account, and all of these either impact on the volume of the vessel or in the autonomy and range of the vessel. And once you start having to rebuild the structure of a yacht because of the tanks, it becomes perhaps cost prohibitive. So I think some of the rebuilds will be limited in what they can actually do.
And you mentioned earlier that there are some kind of simple things that yachts on the water could be doing today in terms of stabilizers, air conditioning, you know, thinking about what energy you're using on the yacht. You've obviously worked with many different owners over the years across a variety of vessels. How easy or difficult are those conversations to have, and how willing do you think owners are to make those? Because ultimately it is a kind of sacrifice, you know, the yacht's going to be a bit warmer, or you're not going to be as comfortable as you could be.
Not entirely optimistic on the yachts that I've been on in the past. I think that they're in years gone by, their drive was more about finance. You know, oh, our fuel bills are expensive. You know, how can we improve that? but in saying that, and this is, you know, this again speaks to the dichotomy that the industry faces. That we have owners building hybrid yachts, you know, because they're concerned about the environment, but then they send some of those hybrid yachts all the way from Monaco to Gibraltar in the summer to fill up on cheap fuel.
Yeah.
so ultimately, you can see how, whilst cost shouldn't be a driver, because these are the people with the means and the wherewithal to pay, but clearly it still remains a driver, even in respect of, you know, the world's most existential threat to the future of our planet, and that's the environment. And you have to wonder about that mentality.
Yeah, you do at times. You obviously set, you know, you set 2030 as the date. Why did you choose that? And do you think there still is time? You know, we're suddenly in 2022. COVID, I think, maybe took away a couple of years away from us. Do you think there is still time to see a significant change in the industry by 2030?
I think there is. I think that that there's limited time, and I like to use a few takeaways of the IPCC report that was released yesterday, and some of those takeaways were that there is no more waiting for climate change. Climate change is happening now, and it's being visited on, you know, the least who are able to adapt to it. You know, the least able to adapt to it. Adapt or die was one of their takeaways, and the clock is ticking. We have no time to waste. And I love this piece that came from an ocean conference that was held in France just recently, and it's just a wonderful expression, and that is nature does not need us, we need nature. And I kind of think that encompasses everything that we need to know, is that we can't continue on this pathway. And if we're hoping to have a planet that's going to be hospitable and fit for the future generations, then we owe it a responsibility to start to make those changes now, and to accelerate those changes. We can't sit on our hands any longer. It can't be business as usual, because, as I said to you before, business as usual is showing that our emissions from the superyacht industry, by the end of this decade, if we do nothing, will be at least double what they were in 2018. And when every other industry and every other government is trying to reduce their emissions with targets for 2030, I don't see how we can be outliers. I don't see how we can be a responsible industry and not rise to the challenge collectively and make a change.
Well, hopefully that's inspiration for all of us to think a bit more about our decisions and our changes. Thank you so much for your time. It's always so insightful to hear your thoughts.
Thank you very much indeed. As I say, I'm passionate, and I believe that with the right spirit, the industry can make a huge difference and set itself on a path for a bright future.
Thanks for listening to this week's Big Boat Interview, which is mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe and tune in on Friday for all the latest news from the superyacht world in the Boat Briefing.